If you're a CMO, AI has handed you speed and scale you've never had before. The question isn't whether AI changes marketing, but it's whether it's actually making it better. My guests today are Emma Fisher, VP of Marketing at AWS, and Sal Mohamed, Head of AEO at LangSync and former Googler. Let's dive in. I have two guests here today by my side. Emma Fisher, VP of Marketing at AWS, and Sal Mohamed, Head of AEO, and I'm going to spell it out because I had to look to look for the signification. Answer Engine Optimization,
indeed.
Right? At LangSync and former Googler. Welcome both. First question, how do you think AI has changed what it means to do great marketing? And what does the CMO role entail now that it didn't have 3 years ago?
Yeah. Hey, it's really cool to be here with Sal and you today. So I'll take that one first, because I think from a broader kind of marketing leader perspective, the challenge a few years ago was really about how creating enough content, creating enough campaigns, creating enough reasons to engage with audiences. And as we know, AI has meant that you can do that. Yeah. Overnight, anyone can create content. But everyone also has access to the same models at the same speed. And therefore, speed is just not a differentiator anymore. Yeah. It's very much about relevance. It's about resonance and the big pieces around trust. And I'm sure we're going to cover that topic a lot today. Those three things are deeply human. And so that's the beast I really want to, you know, dig into a bit today, because... Yeah. What the CMO role now demands is more around architectural thinking. Mm-hmm. And that isn't just running campaigns. It's that architectural thinking is about designing systems. You're deciding where AI gets deployed. You're thinking about how AI plays a part in connecting with customers, in driving efficiencies. But ultimately, it's about using AI as more of an operating system. So from a CMO's perspective, it's where that AI needs that human intelligence. Mm-hmm. In the report, which we'll reference a little bit today, we talk about human insight engineered. And that is a really nice way to think about how you apply AI, because that human insight could be understanding customers and how they behave. So, you know, when we speak to Sal today about how they behave in generative engines and how they now ask questions, mm-hmm. that human insight engineered is also about how you understand customers and what connects from a messaging perspective. But it's also about how you use your understanding of human behavior. So we could go into behavioral science, but how you use that human behavior to understand how to grow and how to hack growth and how to, you know, ultimately, you know, deliver what we're trying to achieve, which is connections and ultimately, you know, outcomes for our marketing campaigns and to drive, you know, growth as an organization. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's probably a good segue, Sal, into, you know, your perspectives on it.
Yeah, look, I think everything you said is bang on. We're just at this moment now where we're all on a rocket ship. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. we have no choice to get off, right? Like, this is the future. Yeah. How do we adapt to it as marketers? And it's a deluge. We are seeing AI create content now faster than humans can consume it. So if we are creating content faster than humans can consume it, the quality of the content needs to be tip top. But I think it's an interesting time for marketers now as well, because out of the C-suite, marketers have the lowest tenure time. So it's one where people are really, you know, you're with it or you're not with it. And I think the challenge for marketers for me really is about being three things. It's about being an orchestrator, a warrior, and a tastemaker.
Okay.
So if you think about the orchestrator, it's about both data and people. So this is Minority Report in real life now. You need to be looking at your organization, how that data is flowing, how the external customer sentiment is moving, what competitors are doing in real time, because that is AI now and it's given us capabilities to do that. But you also need to be an orchestrator of people because all of your team are trying to build in new tools and do new things. So that's really shifting. I think the worry a bit for me really goes to being up for a fight and being brave. So a lot of organizational resistance will happen because of AI. Some of it will be valid, security concerns, everything else. But at the other end, we're going to need marketers to break down and have those chats with IT to be like, look, if we don't do some of this stuff, there won't be a company to protect.
Yeah.
So I think that worry a bit is really somebody has to go and fight that fight. And I think marketers, CMOs are in a great place to do that.
Absolutely.
And to the point around the deluge of content, like taste now becomes the central organizational capability. Like, can I really knock out a great video, something that people are going to stop and engage with, something that even agents will engage with? Because in a sea of content, you need to do something that stands out in a unique way. So I think those sort of three things are going to be really interesting as we move forward.
Thank you. This is a really nice introduction to the episode. And my first question, I think, will allow you, Emma, to go a bit, to dive a bit deeper into the first point you mentioned. So AI is giving every marketing team in the world the same access to the same models with the same outputs. What does that mean for differentiation? The thing that you mentioned just now as well, Sal.
Yeah, so when everyone has access to the same AI models and can create content at the same speed, speed does then not become your differentiator. Yeah. How much content you can create, how fast you can create it, it does not become, because everyone is moving at the same pace. There's then a trust dimension. That's probably the most important one that CMOs just cannot ignore. You know, consumers, as Sal mentioned, are creating content as well as businesses creating content themselves. And there's a trust piece there. You know, you don't trust it as much if it's been, even if it's been labeled as been AI created, they're less, I think I read something that four times more likely to not trust your content if it's been AI generated, even if it's been labeled that way. So the differentiation comes from two areas. One is your own data. So your own proprietary understanding of your customers, your understanding of your market, and your understanding of your business. That proprietary intelligence is your differentiator. How you then put that to work is your the way that you compete. The second is cultural intelligence layer. So that is in itself human judgment. It's local context. It's, you know, brand government that governance, I should say, sorry, that enables you to really transform that generic AI into outputs that connect locally. And brands that win aren't going to be the ones that that are producing the most content. They're going to be the ones that ensure that when a content's consumed in market, it feels local. It feels like it was made for that audience. So yeah, those two differentiators are deeply human, but it's how you put that to work.
Absolutely. And I would say maybe just to piggyback on top of that, maybe a third one, which is kind of the orchestration of it all. So the configurability. AI is a bit like cooking a meal, right? It's about being a good chef. So if you give me and Gordon Ramsay the same pasta, the same tomatoes, the same onions, you will not get the same dish.
Yeah.
And there's still room for marketers to configure the tools in a unique way that drives outputs. You know, why is it that the same Claude that you're using, you're not getting an output to write your report, but that's the same Claude that's doing recursive self-improvement and writing its own next version? Like, there's something in the configurability of these tools that we can unlock. And, you know, going to Emma's point around all these data points, you can get this cultural intelligence, this market know-how. How are you linking all those systems together? Are you getting insights from your customer service team, getting them from the product team, putting them into external data, and then using the tools to generate what you're trying to do?
Right.
Like, how are we configuring the tools that we have? Because, yes, we all have access to the same things, but the outputs that we can generate can still be differentiated.
And this is where you're going to be able to recognize the good brands, like the ones who can orchestrate it nicely.
Exactly.
Okay. Sal, you work at the frontier of how AI systems surface and recommend content. What do you think that means for brand? Does that mean they need to rethink global visibility? And what are most teams still doing wrong?
Yeah, I think we need to rethink marketing.
Okay.
As a whole. So for me, I didn't create an AEO company just because SEO was changing a little bit. I saw a fundamental shift of how people find things. So you can track the figures of investment and you can probably plot a similar graph, right? So Meta launched the Meta Ray-Ban glasses.
Yeah.
Very soon after seeing success of that, they invested, I think, $6, $7 billion into Luxottica for a very small share, by the way. You've got Google and Warby Parker racing for a device. You've got Apple talking about a different device. You've got ChatGPT spending $6 billion on Johnny Ive. Like, the way that we search, who's going to be doing those searches are going to fundamentally change.
Yeah.
So we're going from an area where I need to configure something, let me go one by one, to an agentic world where you'll set your agent off to do that search for you and it'll come back with a ream of answers to do the whole stack of things, to an agent first world where the agent will do things proactively for you.
Right.
And in that world where an agent knows I'm looking for a house in Bristol and we're going past on the train and it said, hey, by the way, I've spotted three properties for you. I've gone and researched two of them. They've got the right floor plan. One stood out for me, so I booked you a viewing next Tuesday because I saw the calendar was free. Let me know if you want me to cancel it. That is a different way of marketing. That's a different way of search. Yeah. And the bigger thing that sits beyond that is the spaces are limited. You know, we walk around with t-shirts literally that say there are no page two in an AI search, right? So, you know, from the Google world where we would tell people, don't worry, you're on page three, that's great. You can still get some traffic. If you're not the top five searches, there is nothing. So in a world where half of searches by 2028 will start in the GPTs, that is a fundamental shift to marketing. You can do everything else right, but if you just cut off the traffic and the visibility, you're in a very different world. So
I was at an event last week and I was speaking to someone I hadn't seen for years, actually works for a big leisure group. And they were talking exactly around similar lines that they are struggling with their web visibility. So dropped 20%. And their web revenues have dropped 12%. Now, that is exactly the challenge that they're having with that people are going, of course, to generative search, to going, find me the best restaurant, whatever, in this town, or asking questions like you would do in a conversation. And they're not showing up because they're not optimizing for machines that ultimately are delivering content back to humans. So it's that findability within those search engines and all those generative. In fact, one of the questions that I get asked a lot is, what's the difference between GEO, AEO, AIO, LLMO? So I think that'd be a really cool one for you to do.
You know what? We'll set the record straight. So when all this started kicking off, we led with LLMO.
Okay.
But I could already see the market was trying to pick a bunch of different winners. So I just went on GoDaddy and bought all the domains. So yeah, if you're ever looking for any of these domains, let me know. I could maybe broker you one or two of them. But we went with AEO because I think, what are we trying to do? Like, this is a search of everything. This is answers to results.
Right.
Generative is fine, but it's also geo. I think it's a bit of a muddied water. I actually quite like LLMO, large language model optimization, because that's fundamentally what you're trying to do. But it only covers this phase of the development, because a lot of agentic stuff won't be about large language models. We're going to have world models. We're going to have different systems. You're going to be in your Tesla car saying, hey, I'm hungry. You know, some Chinese food would be great, but I want to finish it with a Nigerian dessert. Like, it is the search of everything. And this is why people get a little bit offended when I say that AEO is actually the parent of SEO.
Okay.
And SEO is actually the main pillar of it for now, but SEO is still just an answer that you're retrieving back, right? And this is an answer whether you're in your Tesla car, whether you've got your Ray-Ban glasses on, whether you are talking to your Alexa Plus. It's where are my customers searching? Where is their mind share? And how do I get it? That is fundamentally AEO. And right now people focus on, well, it's just a bit like SEO. And it's like, one, not really, when you look at the stats and how it gets retrieved. But two, you're not looking at where the puck is moving. And that stuff is really about how do you safeguard for the future?
Mm.
When OpenClaude and Hermes and Claude are doing searches for people 24/7 with understanding of who they are and how they operate and what they need and what they don't need, that is a shift you need to be going into. You know, we won't talk about whether web pages will exist and all these other sort of futuristic bets, but you have to be on top of the bigger shift underneath sort of the immediate stuff.
And with that, companies, especially large organizations, are only thinking in English.
Yeah.
And
totally.
So that multilingual GEO is something that, you know, to get ahead, that has to be top of every marketing leader's radar. Because that's where you're going to compete.
Yeah.
Like getting ahead in English, you know, people are still behind in generative optimization in English. Yeah. So that multilingual piece and doing that at scale, you know, you have to have that kind of trustable platform to be able to do that. Yeah. So,
and it's the easiest way to actually get ahead in a foreign market. Is to try and optimize for that market. So 60% of the results that will come from a foreign search will be based on English sources.
Mm-hmm.
That's just a gap crying to be closed. The LLMs do not want to do that. They're just a dearth of information that they can't get. So the more that you can localize with that cultural context is really where you set yourself apart to be like, well, these guys do great Japanese, they do great Chinese, they do great Italian. I'm going to keep running back to their site and getting my information from there.
Back to you, Emma, back to localization. Our latest RWS research on the state of content in 2026 shows that 86% of content leaders say that AI is accelerating content creation, yet 65% also say that it's slowing localization. What's actually going wrong?
Yeah, I think that finding surprises people, and it shouldn't. We call it the localization paradox in the report. And it comes back to what Sal was just saying, that what leaders are doing, or content leaders are doing, is using LLMs to generate their localization. So, but as we know, LLMs are just helpful little machines that try and, you know, guess the next word. They're kind of pattern prediction machines. So when you scale that content into a market using or trying to be efficient, the localization process then gets put into market. Teams are generating that content more than ever. And when it's in market, they're then discovering that there's a deeper problem because it isn't culturally accurate. It doesn't engage. It's culturally off or just flat. Therefore, they're sending it back for rework. So there's a cost implication there where I think in the report it's 21%. So one in five localization dollars are being wasted because that generic approach is being applied to localization. Therefore, when it lands, it's not right and it's going back for rework.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of that cultural intelligence layer built in is what needs to be the strategy going forward.
And only 6% of content leaders trust AI with cultural nuance, yet they still deploy it globally. How do you actually evaluate, like, how do you make sure you select a good system, you know, that you can trust?
I don't think one exists.
Okay.
I think you have to pick a good partner. Okay. And I think that's where, you know, companies like RWS come in. That can safeguard me, because if I'm a global conglomerate, I operate maybe 7-8 websites in 50 different markets. Like, a lot of those markets won't even make sense for me to do manually from an economic point of view, right?
Yeah.
So when I'm looking at that, I'm thinking, okay, I need to use technology, but I need a partner that can cover my back. Because when it goes wrong in Japanese, I don't have the tools. And also, I can't just rely back on the LLMs to go and do this. And it's a structural thing of how they were trained, right? Like, they get information and they're doing this stuff, but they're not getting the cultural nuances that are required to deploy at scale. And the bigger problem that people don't realize is AEO AI content is way bigger than just your website. You know, we're now looking at subject matter expert content. We're looking at Reddit. We're looking at Quora. You need to have conversations. They need to be concurrent. They need to be continual. You need to be in the comment section with people. Yeah. And to have a system that can go and do that flexibly at scale is way bigger than sort of what a lot of companies sort of navigate to when they just, you know, do a quick translation and slap it on.
That's a good segue to my next question. Maybe you have another point, but if you could tell every CMO out there to do one thing differently with AI, what would it be?
I would say go beyond the chatbot.
Right.
So the big warning sign for me is, I say, well, what are you guys doing? Well, we're using ChatGPT or we're using Claude, et cetera. But what they really mean is they're using the chatbot experience of that, right? Like, these things are capable of building products, of doing work, of syncing together systems for you, of going and doing research concurrently and matching that with the business goals and objectives that you have. And I'm not talking about agents and setting OpenClaw wild on your database. Well, you know, far from that. But, you know, are you using ChatGPT Codex, for instance, which is a very different product? They have that product specifically because the GPT product would only get you so far. Same thing with Claude Cowork, with Claude Code. Are you actually getting some of the best marketers in your organization to go and tackle problems and innovate on the edge and bring those solutions back? Because that's going to be the differentiator. If you're just going to say, okay, now let me do 5 PR releases with ChatGPT, you're going to get the same slop that everybody's getting.
Yeah.
But being able to use these harnesses, as we call them, and creating products that are unique and take a lot of your nuance, but matched with the capabilities of AI, that's how you get ahead.
Emma, same question.
Yeah, I mean, I would say just stop measuring AOI or AI ROI by cost savings alone.
Yeah.
You know, I hear a lot about efficiencies. Our research is in the paper that we, the Content Unlocked report, I think it's 51% of content leaders are measuring AI success through that cost reduction, and only 12% are tracking it on revenue gains. Mm. And that's completely the wrong scorecard.
Yeah.
You know, it's actively leading CMOs down the wrong path to making bad decisions on just efficiencies alone in terms of cost savings. You know, when you optimize for cost, you end up deploying AI everywhere, as you've just said,
yeah.
And it's not going to be the most effective outcome. The question should be really not how much can AI save me, but it should be how can AI make your content more effective in the market that you're trying to reach?
Mm-hmm.
And they're completely different questions.
Mm-hmm.
So, and they're obviously completely different investments. Mm-hmm. And it's that cost-saving piece that really needs to be around kind of what can you achieve by using AI to connect with your customers better, to understand and build trust better. So, yeah, it's definitely around, you know, reframing how
you
think about and measure.
Yeah. Thank you. Two very good pieces of advice here. One final question. What does cultural intelligence mean to you? In a few words, maybe Sal, you go first.
In an AI sense, I think cultural intelligence means a one-to-one molding of an understanding of who that person is.
Mm-hmm.
So this was the original goal of Google, right? It was the right answer to the right person at the right time. And it was an AI company. These were two AI researchers. But the technology wasn't there. Now technology has a opportunity to meet me exactly where I am as who I am.
Yeah.
So me being a northern born Nigerian heritage Muslim whose dad grew up in the Middle East when I was younger, who lived in China and Spain, I have a unique cultural fingerprint.
Absolutely.
And now AI has this unique ability to understand me and what drives me, the type of things that I'm looking for, and meet me at that level.
Yeah.
And I think the better these systems get, the better we get with language, nuance, context, that is going to be the real unlocking where everyone feels seen and heard.
Hyper-personalization.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you?
One thing that I wanted to is a story that I didn't bring in as part of this, which is there's a project that we're working on with a global sports brand.
Okay.
And they're actually creating like an AI coach. Okay. And when we're talking about cultural intelligence and that cultural intelligence layer, they came to us with a whole list of prompts to help build this AI coach. And there's pages and pages of prompts. And these prompts have gone to one of our linguistic expert teams, really clever teams that we've got internally that look at how those prompts are then going to land
locally
and train their coach. And they're all very, very US-centric. So, of course, the prompts and therefore are going to give an output that's really high energy, that's really enthusiastic, you know, that's really pumped and full of excitement. Those prompts, if you were to run that AI coach in Germany or Japan or in the UK, they could come across as parody in the UK. They could come across as, you know, land very differently dependent on where that coach is then deployed. So there's a real kind of real world use case there about how cultural intelligence, even when you're prompting engines, has to be considered, and that human insight into how that is going to land needs to be considered up front. So that was a really good example of cultural intelligence.